there, folks. Welcome to an edition of Stranger in a Southern Land. I, of course, am your host, Jake Manning. Today in the program, I speak with my new best friend of 5 years, Adam Page. Don't worry, we explained to you that big long-running joke at the very beginning. But Adam Page, who you might know from Ring of Honor Wrestling and now New Japan and the Bullet Club. You know, me and Adam have been, you know, best friends for like 5 years now, and I still call him new best friend. And like I said, we explained at the very beginning of the podcast why that is, but it's just a pleasure and a delight to sit down and talk to him. He came over to the home studio. I know he's been very busy recently. His schedule hadn't permitted us to talk soon, but I wanted to talk to him for quite some time. You know, he's been always been a great guy to hang around and travel with, especially, you know, big fan of country music. I can get behind that myself. I like that as well. But also, too, we're kind of cut from the same cloth. He's a country boy. His mom is a school teacher. So he's got a very simplistic, very honest, very pure way of looking at the world. And, you know, now his wrestling career is taking off. You know, his life is starting to change, not just so much because he's getting married soon, but his wrestling career in general. He's making a lot of life changes, and a lot of the hard work that he talks about in this podcast is just now starting to pay off. You know, and I was kind of interesting how this is going to be, you know, because normally a wrestling podcast, you get the wrestling questions and you don't really get to know the person. But, you know, Adam's a great person and I wanted to highlight that. And I feel like this podcast has got a good mixture of both. I think you get a good sense of who Adam is as a person and what he's done and what his goals are in professional wrestling. So I think this is a very dynamic and very well-rounded podcast. If you don't know who Adam Page is, or if you've just been aware of him, or if you're a big fan of him, I think you're going to discover a lot of things about him. So very excited to bring this conversation to you guys today. But as always, I'm very excited to be a part of the Shining Wizards Podcast Network. Great guys, making the cool kids table a little bit larger. Can't thank them enough. Make sure you check them out and all the other podcasts that they have at shiningwizardsnetwork.com. Also, too, big thank you to my producer, Don, as always. And make sure you support Don and all his other podcasts, especially my other podcast, How Did This Get Booked, that I do with Sane Rally. So if you want to check out of Don's other podcasts, especially How Did This Get Booked, make sure you log on to dsct.tv. Now, as always, I like to give you some dates, let you know what I've got going on. I got some comedy dates, I got some wrestling dates, I'm going to give you the rest of August, and then the next following podcast, I'm going to give you the rest of September. But right now, I'm just going to get through August because I really want to get into this conversation with Adam Page. So, to let you know about this Friday and Saturday, August 19th and 20th, I will be emceeing at Bonkers here in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Executive Park Hilton, just off of 77 in Charlotte, North Carolina. For more information about those shows, make sure you log on to bonkerscomedyproductions.com, and also to Bonkers with a Z. Can't forget that very important detail in your Bonkers with a Z, because, well, they're bonkers. I don't know if that's their slogan. I've been using it a lot when I MC, but regardless of that, Sunday, August 21st, I'll be wrestling for PWX Wrestling at Escapade, just off Independence Boulevard, just in the shadow of the old Independence Arena. Make sure you show up for that show. It's going to be a big match, me taking on Cedric Alexander, who me and Adam Page talk about in this podcast. So very much looking forward to that match with Cedric Sunday, August 21st for PWX Wrestling. For more information about that show, make sure you log on to pwxpro.com. Now, the following weekend, Friday, August 26th, Saturday, August 27th, and Sunday, August 28th, and Thursday, August 25th, I will be with Northeast Wrestling. That's right, for the 25th to the 28th, I will be with Northeast Wrestling. It's going to be a big whole loop. One of those is a makeup from a rain date. I think three of the four of those are stadium shows. I know Cody Rhodes is going to be there. The Hardy Boys are going to be there. Jushin Thunder Liger is going to be there. I think Damian Sandow is going to be there on a couple of those dates. Ryback, I know, is going to be on a couple of those dates. So for more information about those shows, they're going to be huge. They're going to be monstrous. Some of the biggest events of this tail end of the summer are going to be from Northeast Wrestling, Wrestling Under the Stars. Make sure you check out more information about those shows at northeastwrestling.com. As always, things come up, things pop up last minute, and also, you know, I'll let you know about promotions, about merch, and all these other things that come into contact. If you're a fan with me, I want to let you know more about me, and the best way to know more about what I've got going on, especially last minute bookings, merch, cool little things on the internet. You should check out all kinds of different things. I'm tweeting about stuff. I'm very active on social media. The best way to get in the loop with all the stuff that I'm trying to push out to you guys is by following me on Twitter at ManScoutManning or on Instagram at ManScoutManning if you have a question about the podcast. Or if you want to become a sponsor of this podcast, make sure you email me at jake@sslshow.com. Or if you want to book me for an upcoming wrestling event, make sure you email me at manscoutmanning@yahoo.com. Anyways, without further ado, like I said, I wanted to get to this very quickly because I'm very excited to bring it to you. And this is a conversation with my new best friend of 5 years, Adam Page, here on Stranger in a Southern Land. Too, like they do it all the time. Just a complete asshole in the microphone, like check one two. Still my biggest pet peeve in professional wrestling. Like everywhere we go, I swear to God, just like Jesus. Like when you find a good sound man in professional wrestling, marry him.
It's a rare thing.
It's for sure. But Adam Page, new best friend.
Yes, what's up?
As you've been called since.
Oh, God, probably 4 or 5 years. I don't know.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out. Is it like 2011?
Probably. Let's see. That was, yeah, probably so. About finishing college, yeah.
Yeah. You were looking like Mike Seidel at the time.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Buck 80 wet.
That's the thing. You two look more like brothers than him and his brother.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, I was just thinking about that. And to give context to people why I call you new best friend is the guy that used to live in this house with me who ran PWX early on. He used to say, oh, you're going to love this guy. He's from the farm. He's a good friend. You're going to be best friends. You're going to have a new best friend, Jake.
He told me the same thing. Oh, Jake, he's a little scary, but you're going to love him. He's going to be your new best friend.
He's real mean. He don't like nobody, but he like you. You're from the country. You get along, you know? And of course, I remember the first time we met, the whole day I was like, yeah, this is my new best friend, right?
Oh, yeah.
And ever since then, it's always, hey, new best friend.
New best friend. Still new.
Still new.
Still new best friend.
Well, listen, in the context of life and the way, you know, hundreds of years and stuff like that.
Right.
In this country and stuff like that. Like, you know, 5 years, just a drop in the bucket.
Oh, it's nothing.
Nothing at all. But I must confess, you know, like I said, I've wanted to do this for a while, but we've been entangled in this huge feud.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
for sure.
And now, of course, you're a part of the biggest wrestling faction in the history of professional wrestling. So now it feels and looks like I only scooped you up because of that. But
right.
No, you've been on my radar. You've been in my docket. You've been in my crosshairs for quite some time. So I appreciate you sitting down and talking to me, especially as busy as your schedule is right now.
Hey, I just like had to leave an hour early. No big deal.
I appreciate it, especially come over to the home studio. It's a busy day. I was just over there at the end of Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest. And
right.
It's crazy. So,
good. Yeah. It should be.
Yeah. I made money selling stuff. I think you're going to be fine.
Okay.
Yes. But no, and of course, I've been in a rush all day, and I think you can appreciate this. I was listening to my iPod, and Alabama came on.
Oh, sweet.
I'm in a hurry of all songs, and it always comes on when you're in the biggest rush, I swear. And you're like, you know, screw you, Alabama. You don't know my life. You know what I'm saying? I'm allowed to be in a hurry.
Right.
but no, like, you're a country guy and stuff like that, and I think that's why we get along so well. But, like, I have some very interesting things, and I don't know, and I'm going to ask this of you. Because I'm curious about this, because my introduction to wrestling is very interesting, I think, geographically, because it might be a little bit different for you. I didn't know wrestling really existed other than WWF for a very long time.
Right.
And then cable came around and I knew about WCW.
Right.
But this idea of independent wrestling did not exist for me whatsoever, because where I was in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, like, I saw a poster for one indie show one time in Illinois. And it was in college. I think it was like a sophomore in college. So right. I was like 20. You know what I'm saying? And it blew my mind that, what? There's something other than what's on TV?
Right, yeah. There are other people doing this?
Yeah.
Like, so, what are you talking about?
So for you in the Mid-Atlantic region, but you are definitely in the country, in South Boston area.
Yeah, near South Boston. Yeah.
So what was your exposure? Did the Jim Crockett Promotions ever run house shows? Did WCW ever run small arenas around you?
Not really, you know, and I didn't even get into wrestling. I mean, I might have been like 8 or 9 maybe, but like even at that time, that was the invasion angle. That's when I got into wrestling.
Oh, now so you're like, making me feel old already.
Oh, sorry. But like, yeah, like to me, wrestling didn't exist until it was all just WWF or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, there definitely no, like, house shows or anything like that around the area. Maybe, like, Roanoke or something like that. I think I went to my first, maybe, like, a Raw in Roanoke, maybe. But, like, I was one of the kids.
What year, though? I got a question about that, because I was definitely extra talent at a couple of those Roanoke shows.
It could have been one of those. I don't remember what year it was. Maybe, like, early 2000s. But I do remember the show was when, like, 3-Minute Warning splashed Mae Young or whoever it was. That was the show, and it was the one where, like...
Yeah, that's a little before my time.
Okay.
Yeah. I was thinking a little bit later, but because I didn't know what your fandom was, but it would have been about that time, you know.
Yeah.
Back when we, you know, it was a big deal to see women kissing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was a taboo thing.
Oh, my God, that was great.
Now, it's just every day.
Oh, yeah.
God bless it, you know.
Oh, yeah. Love America.
Exactly. But so that was your exposure to wrestling. Now, here's another thing I got to ask you, because... this is interesting when you live in the country, like it's like the idea is always it's bred into you, get a job, you know, do this, you just raise a family because that's all you know around you.
Right. Yeah. It's all you've seen, you know, and that's when that's all you've seen, that's all you know what I mean? And like my family was like that in a certain respect, but you know, I got into wrestling really young and, I mean, still, you know, that was like invasion angle time, but I was one of the kids when I was a kid, like, I didn't like to just watch something to be a fan of it. I wanted to do it. So, like, you know, 9 years old, I got, like, on the trampoline and we started doing shows and stuff in the backyard, like, pretty much instantly within the first few months of me watching wrestling. And then, like, we had a computer, we had internet, you know what I mean?
So, oh, that was a big stuff. Tool.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, I probably found out about independent wrestling within the first year that I even knew wrestling existed. You know what I mean? It wasn't like I discovered something huge. It was just there from the beginning almost. So, like, I had my cousin was dating this dude, and he was probably right out of high school, maybe, and he was doing, like, indie shows an hour down, like, from the house, so I would go to those, too, like, as a kid. So I got exposed to that pretty young. Probably is Jimmy Love running.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what it was called at the time, but, like, running Pelham or Wentworth or whatever.
Okay, well, can you remember the juxtaposition from seeing a show like that in WWE? Like, what was the, like... What was it? What was that turn? Like,
right.
Like, how's this different? Like, whoa, this is a lot different than what I thought it would be.
Like, thinking now, it's a huge difference. But at the time I was a kid, it was like, oh, it's a wrestling ring. That's all I cared. You know what I mean? It didn't matter the production and all that, like the hugeness of it all. It was just as huge being with those 40 people in the crowd in Pelham as it was watching it on TV to me. You know what I mean? Because it was just wrestling.
Because it's a wrestling ring in front of you.
Right. Yeah. And to actually see one, it's like, oh my God, there it is. You know, I can touch it. It blew my mind, and I was still just as amazed by that as by anything on TV.
Yeah, that's why I still, like, when we do a lot of these big shows with big-time wrestling, I take, like, empty arena pictures of a ring, because there's not a whole lot of things out there that are sexier than a wrestling ring.
Oh, no, not at all.
Just an empty arena, and, you know, it's really just fascinating to see. I just love pictures of it, like... You know, I don't download porn on my phone. It's like all pictures of empty arena rings.
Right. And I can still get to a show early and like no one's there. The ring is set up or whatever and people are just milling around. And I still feel like a little kid, you know, like, oh my God, there's the wrestling ring. And I can still like get in it and just pace around. And I could probably just stand in a wrestling ring pacing around all day. And I don't know, just something about that is cool to me.
Yeah, I mean? like I think as us as wrestlers, then it's like, oh, there it is. There's the thing that's going to rattle. I'm going to rattle my brain around and send me to an early grave.
Right. Yeah,
but like
probably.
But you know, like if you really sit back and pull yourself back, like you know, iris out a little bit, you're like, oh wow, like
yeah,
this is pretty cool. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
So, anyways, you wanted to do it,
right?
You know what I'm saying? And like that's the thing, like. Like, so you've got this whole path of people, like, they've started their own companies and business, and they're always successful, and you do this, you know, but, like, you there's always a backup plan. Like, what was the thought process of, like, well, I'm going to do this, but maybe I'll change it to Chase's wrestling
thing. Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I kind of got out of wrestling a little bit when I was in high school and got into, like, filmmaking or whatever. And, me and my buddy made these two little movies. I thought it was the best thing ever.
What films did you make?
They were called The List.
Okay.
They're on YouTube. I took them. They're, like, private or whatever, but I can send it to you. it's called The List. It was just me and my buddy. We played two stoners, which in real life, we weren't stoners at all. Like, I didn't even know, like, what drugs were, but we thought that was funny. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, it's weird. The small town, sometimes, like, drugs didn't penetrate it. I talked to kids that were younger than me or older than me. Like, oh, we were smoking pot when we were 13. I'm like, but that didn't come to the small towns.
Oh, yeah, no.
There'd be that crazy uncle that was at the end of the town. He'd have it.
Right.
But he was very protective of it, so it never filtered the schools.
Right, yeah. And then, like, for me, it was like watching the 70s show. That's all I knew about drugs. You know what I mean? And even that was... you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we thought that was funny. Like, all right, we'll be two stoners. And then we get, like, Zeus shows up in the sky and he gives us this list of stuff to do. If we do it all, we become immortal. And it was just pretty much like a really dumb movie just with all our friends and stuff in it.
Very much a Dude, Where's Your Car?
Pretty much, yeah. Really, really low budget Dude, Where's Your Car?
Yeah. So you're like, well, there's this wrestling thing, but I'll do this acting thing too. Or the directing.
Like, and like, I liked working with the camera and editing. I think I liked editing more than anything. And so then
what were you editing on back then?
Oh my God. Some kind of Windows laptop. I don't know. In Movie Maker.
Okay. I remember Movie Maker. Yeah.
And you know, I was like finding like these plugins for Movie Maker and stuff like that to do, oh, like we make it look like it's, you know, all different colors when we're high or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Did that, and like my plan in high school then became, okay, yeah, I'll go to school for film editing, not knowing like what kind of job that would lead to. That didn't cross my mind. I was like, oh, that's something to go to school for.
Well, I made a big mistake. In the sense that I was like, oh, I'll go for film. And what I didn't realize what I was going to school for was broadcasting.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize there was a distinction between the two. And turns out I ended up in like one of the best broadcasting schools in the country. Like we had like 95 percentile in the workplace.
Oh God.
And I started listening to these people like, oh, I get to be a camera guy for WXC Word, whatever in Kewaunee, Illinois. I'm like, I don't want to be a camera guy. In Kewaunee, Illinois. Like,
oh,
I wanted to be making films. That's what I thought I was signing up for. I didn't realize there was a difference between video and film.
Oh, yeah, me either. Like, I was completely clueless to, like, what a college, you know, a stint in college could mean for, like, a job. I didn't care. Like, my dad went to Virginia Tech, so, like, my whole family's big Virginia Tech fans. So I just thought when I was a kid, I'm supposed to go to Virginia Tech, too. And then it was just a matter of finding out, okay, I'll figure out, I guess I'll do this thing. And then after being there a year, I realized, like, oh, God, it's like a film school. They're teaching us how to make movies in Hollywood and how to move out there and make somebody coffee to hope we can somehow make a movie. And I was like,
Get somebody a script.
Right, yeah. Like, I don't care about this at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But like, this seems really hard.
Yeah. And I had something I had, you know, at that point then no passion for. I was like, I don't care about this. You know, I like editing, whatever.
Okay, so you were actually in a film school.
I got a degree in communication with an emphasis in film.
I got an emphasis in broadcasting.
Right.
Same exact thing.
Right. So I took, you know, all those basic comm classes and stuff, but then the other ones were like I took a Native Americans in film class. And then, you know, like...
We are pretty much... I took a minorities in the media class. That was taught by the guy who wrote the textbook.
Oh.
So, like, man, we are the same. You are my best friend.
It's creepy. Yeah, but I did all that, and I was just realizing, like, after the first year, like, I don't want to do this at all. You know, I just went here because it's what you're supposed to do, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but, like, I got my associates out of high school, which was really cool, so I had 2 years to get my bachelor's at Tech, and I had to, you know, fight with like the counselors and stuff about it to make sure I got the classes right. But
so you were taking college courses in high school,
right? Yeah, and just like the English and math and stuff like that.
What made you want to do that?
Well, again, that's like something that like I didn't consciously decide. It was more like my mom said, "Hey, you're smart. You should be in like the best classes you can." So then I was in pre-cal and stuff like that, and I was getting A's and stuff like that. Like I was smart, and I did my work when I had to, but it wasn't like it was something. Like I said, okay, yes, I'm going to do this. You know,
I'm just, on a track. I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Just
your mom's like, you're smart. You're going to do this. I'm not going to let you slack.
Right. And it's like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, no big deal.
I'm just going to take more school.
Yeah.
I'm going to double down on school.
Because it was what I felt like I was supposed to be doing. Like, there's no question. You know what I mean? Like, why am I in these hard classes? It wasn't like that. I was just like, oh, yeah, just show up and do the work. It was never really like that hard for me, school. But yeah, then when I got to college after that first year, I was like, wow, this sucks. I don't want to do this. But I had a year left, and I was like, well, I might as well, like, leave here with something, so I'll do another year, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So what'd you leave there with?
A bachelor's in communication with an emphasis in film, and then a minor in business leadership. And that minor, I probably took, I don't know, like 10 classes or something like that for that minor. I have no idea what I learned. Like, I couldn't tell you even one topic we discussed. I couldn't tell you, like, anything. I have no idea what I learned from that whole thing.
See, you should have did what I did, the communications degree with the emphasis, broadcasting or film or communication, whatever, but you should have took a marketing class.
Oh, yeah, I should
have. A marketing minor, because that's what I did, because I was wrestling during college.
Right.
And I knew I was going to, or I was when I finally declared my main minor. I think I knew, or I was in it, and I was like, "Oh, this marketing thing might come in handy." There's still principles that I use today from those marketing classes,
oh, yeah.
even today.
Yeah, I can imagine. Like, and if I feel like you know, it's the case with me, and it's probably the case with a lot of people. When you get out of high school, like, you're just so damn clueless. Like, you don't know about anything. I feel like now would be the point in my life where I know enough about the world to go to college and know what I want to pursue. At the time, it was just kind of like, I'll do whatever you say I should be doing.
Well, and you know what I mean? You have like older brothers or
no.
See that? Yeah. I think that's one of the things when you're the oldest,
yeah.
you're always feel like you're clueless.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then you're always told that you have to share.
Right.
So like, right. you know, like, so there's this sense of responsibility at all points in time, and you have to be on point because nobody's telling you anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I had no idea why I was taking the classes. I was like, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And there was a guy who, my last year in high school taught a graphic design class. And I remember him telling me, like, as a senior, like, hey, hurry up and graduate so, like, I can hire you to teach some of these classes for me, because he's also running some stuff at the college. So, like, that was my idea while I was going to college in my mind was, okay, I'm going to get this degree so he can hire me to teach his classes. Like, for one job, I was preparing my whole college career for one job, which was just him saying something in passing.
That leads you back to your hometown.
Right. Yeah. Because it's like, oh, okay, cool. That's a job. I think I might would like doing that. And, like, somehow... he ended up moving on. Somebody else was teaching those classes. And then he quit like 3 days before school started, the year after I graduated college. Mm-hmm. So like, I got that job. Just, yeah, really weird, but it worked out so good.
Yeah, because I thought
good.
That was weird. When I first met you, they said you were a school teacher.
Right.
And like I said, you look like young Mike Seidel.
I was 20.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just turned 20.
You were 20 years old teaching high school.
Yeah. Kids were like my age, some of them. It's ridiculous.
Yes, because in the country, there's a couple people that end up going to school a little bit longer.
Right. I mean,
it happens. There's that family of people. For me, it was the Hograffer family.
And I had, I remember after my first semester, there was this one girl I had like my first semester there. And then she was like a December graduate, and she was probably 19, maybe about to turn 20. So we're like the same age. And she finished up school that December and then like asked me to move in with her. You know, I was still living with my parents, and she somehow knew that. And she's like, hey, like, you're still living at home. Like, we should move in together. You know, it won't be like that. You know, we just need somewhere to be, you know. So that was kind of weird. But, yeah, we were, like, the same age or whatever. I don't know why she felt comfortable enough to ask me that. It was a really weird thing.
Well,
but,
you're an attractive man. Well, I mean, like, listen, I'd ask you to move in with me. You're so pretty. Like, but no, like, so now you're teaching school. You're on this path, and actually you've reached your final destination of where your path was supposed to be.
Right, yeah. Somehow, like, it should not have happened that way.
No.
You know what I mean? There's no reason it should have happened that way, but somehow it did. And I was teaching there, and I was actually miserable the first year I was there. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like I had no idea what I was doing. You know, I was teaching stuff like, I remember the first 4 or 5 weeks of the class I was teaching was about, like, Illustrator. And I never even used Illustrator. Somehow. So, like, I had to, like, every night go home, spend a few hours, like, learning how to do a day's worth of work for the students, and then come in the next day and then say, okay, this is what we're going to do, acting like I knew it all along.
You had to bullshit sharks.
I bullshitted for, like, yeah, for a solid year. Just
kids are
pure
just
bullshit.
Smelling it on
Oh,
you.
Yeah.
They know. They know you
I
don't
think
know
they
anything.
Knew. I think they knew.
Yeah, they know. I mean, you're only 2 years removed from them.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So they know you don't know what you're talking
but
about.
But somehow, like, you know, I never ran into too many problems where, like, they treated me like I was their age. You know, aside from that girl, you know, they all treated me like I was just any other teacher, which is kind of weird. Like, I expected to have problems with mm-hmm. kids who were my age, but I don't know, they didn't question it. I don't know. Maybe I was kind of a hard ass as a teacher. I don't know. Like, I don't know what made them respect me. I don't know. But yeah, I never really had any problems with that.
Like I said, like, when I first heard, it's like, he's a school teacher. Like, how is that even possible? Right. And, like, wasn't your mom also a school teacher?
Yeah, she taught at the same high school. And then after, like, a year or two I was there, she moved up into, like, not a principal, but kind of like I don't know, more like an office position or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people would say, like, she helped me get the job, but that's not really even true. Like, they had the guy quit 3 days, and I was literally the only person in South Boston, Virginia, who could teach a graphic design course. So mm-hmm. this kind of worked.
Oh. Listen, my mother was also a school teacher, too. So, like, I know that pain and also that luxury.
Oh, yeah.
And I kind of get to do kind of what you want, you know?
Right. I had my mom as a teacher for 2 years in high school, too. Right. That was kind of weird. But, like, I was a really quiet, like, kid who just did all my work, so it was really, wasn't, you know, like, a big deal or whatever.
Mm-hmm. You're probably a nice boy following
the rules. I guess I was. I was. I didn't know that you couldn't, you know what I mean?
Okay, so you're this nice boy. You teach in school.
Right.
You know, at 20 years old. Where does life turn in a different direction and you start saying, hey, I want to get in this crazy world of professional wrestling?
That started when I was, you know, 8 or 9 or whatever. Like, my cousin was dating this dude who was wrestling in Pelham or whatever. And I told him, like, hey, like, I want to be a wrestler. And he's like, well, you're 9 years old. You can't. Mm-hmm. But when you, you know, get 16, I'll train you and you can start wrestling. Totally, like, thinking.
Okay, so like, through pretty much college and everything else, you were still wrestling?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, like, he's probably just thinking, like, oh, yeah, like, just forgot about that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I held on to that. Mm-hmm. That pushed me for years, and then I finally got 15 or whatever.
You're big on long-term goals.
Yeah. And, like, somehow they work out. I still don't know how to explain it.
Oh, don't worry. You're young. You'll find out that that's
okay. It'll all fall apart soon enough.
You still got a few more mountains to climb, and you're climbing one right now. Trust me. But anyways, he's, you know, your long-term goals. What age did you first start wrestling?
I started training maybe at like 15. And I say training loosely because it was pretty much like I would just meet them in Danville, ride with them to a show somewhere in Mount Airy or whatever. Mm-hmm. They'd have the ring set up at like 1 or 2 o'clock, and then we'd just get in the ring until 5 o'clock and just do whatever. Oh, let's practice Canadian Destroyers or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, that was my introduction to wrestling training.
You just kind of hung around. You're one of those kids that hangs around.
Yeah. I hung around. And then, like, by the time I was 16, they're like, all right, we're going to let you have your first match. And I probably should not have been wrestling at that time, but neither should most of the people in the shows anyway. So, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. So okay. So when you're 16, you're taking, you know, college courses. You're taking high school,
right.
And now you're wrestling.
And I'm wrestling on the weekends. Yeah.
Other sports.
No other sports. Like I wrestled, like in middle school in 8th grade. I would go practice with the high school team and then do like exhibition matches and stuff. And like I wish I would have kept up with it because it kept me in really good shape. And you know I was learning. I was actually kind of good at wrestling, but it was just so boring to me. I wanted to go home and jump on the trampoline and do 450s and stuff like that. You know, so I quit doing that just because I don't want to play on the trampoline.
Yeah, that's just not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
I signed up for flips. Okay?
Right.
Like
right.
That's what I signed up for.
Yeah, and there were no flips in
there
that.
No flips.
So.
There was no leg slapping. You know,
none.
None of that. So young, 16, 18-year-old. Adam Page wrestling around, just kind of doing the shows, like, hey, you know, and you're young, it's like, oh, I'm wrestling, I'm just kind of doing it. But now, when does it come a point that, like, you know what, I kind of got to reach past this little area? Like, what's the thought process of the plan there?
I think, you know, when I started wrestling, it was just for the first year or two, it was just like, I was just so happy I was in a wrestling ring. And I was getting involved in, like, oh, I'm going to do a story, like, you know, whatever, like, that was just so cool. But after a couple of years, it's kind of like, all right. Maybe I'm okay at this. Maybe I'm kind of good at it. Maybe I should try something a little different. And I think by the time I got in college was when I started to realize, like, okay, I need to get out of this area. I need to pursue other things. Mm-hmm. I started, like, going to my, I think I went to my first Ring of Honor camp when I was first year in college. So maybe like 18 or so.
Oh, wow. So you were doing those for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I did one, probably my first year of college. And then I did a second one my second year of college. So it was just two, you know, those 2 years or whatever, but then I would do like little dark matches and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, after I finished college too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I remember you going up there a couple of times and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
I remember them talking about you, like even just the one time I was up there.
Right.
Yeah. I remember them being very high on you very, very early.
Yeah. And it surprised me. Like there were probably this first camp I went to maybe 40 guys or whatever. And you know, these are guys who've been wrestling all their lives. They're amazing athletes. They're like, you know, like the guys you'd think they'd be picking up, and then they pulled aside 3 or 4 of us to talk to us, you know, about their like real interest in us and what they wanted us to do. And like it was me and Elgin and Tony Nese. You know what I mean? Like why am I right here? You know what I mean? And they paired me up with Elgin to do a match at that first camp. And I just went home. I was like, I can't, like, what? You know what I mean? After seeing everybody else who was there, mm-hmm. it's like, why am I cool? And that kind of validated, like, okay, yeah, I'm definitely going to try. You know what I mean? I got to try now.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that I've kind of learned as well, is like sometimes there's a little thing that people see, especially now that I've been doing it long enough, it's blaring right away. And sometimes even I don't see them in myself that I do, like little mistakes. And sometimes it's just as simple as a lockup.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? Like there's like, oh, I like the way you locked up, and then you're engaged in it. And if somebody has a shitty lockup, they're like, I don't give a fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Or it's a situation like you can just tell the way people move and footwork, yeah. and there's a timing thing. And it's really hard to explain, but when you see it, you know that guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
there's a lot of people that they can work and they can get there, but then there's certain people that just kind of pick it up pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know, and when you nurture that gift, it seems to flower.
Right.
You know, but anyways, you know, very early on, it was probably like just get in the ring as much as possible.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just wanted to wrestle. I didn't care. I probably wrestled a year, year and a half before I got paid. I got paid like $10. I did a ladder match or whatever, the main event, a show somewhere, and got paid $10. And I was like, this is for me? Like, this is just for me wrestling? Like, this isn't from anything else? He's like, no, like, that's your pay. I was like, oh, cool.
Well, and I think you can look back on those times now. And I think especially where your head's at, you can look back on those times very favorably.
Right.
That's something I'm trying to teach myself in comedy right now is, because right now it's just like, just get on stage as much as possible.
Right,
not really making a whole lot of money with it, but I'm getting up as much as I possibly can, driving to Atlanta just to do 5 minutes on an open mic.
Right.
You know, just ridiculous stuff, but stuff I did for wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I don't look upon those times in wrestling as favorably right now because of how I feel about my career, but like, I remember during those times having fun.
Yeah.
So during this time, I'm trying to remember like, hey, really enjoy this, because I didn't enjoy them when I was wrestling, because it's all about getting to that next generation.
Right.
So do you feel like you enjoyed those times? Do you look upon those times as enjoyment?
I think I did enjoy them. You know, I was so young, and like just being in a wrestling ring is all I wanted to do. You know what I mean? Anything beyond that for me was just like, this is great. You know what I mean? I didn't worry about getting paid. It was probably 3 or 4 years into wrestling before I even started thinking like, you know, oh, maybe they should pay me a little more. You know, like things like that. Like, I didn't care. I just wanted to wrestle. You know what I mean? And like, I look back on that very favorably.
Yeah, because there's, once that flame gets extinguished, you can't get it back.
Oh, no.
Like, no. Once that light behind your eyes goes away and it's all darkness, yeah, that doesn't come back. Oh, but anyways, we got to meet up. You know, Tyshawn Williams, I guess we could say his name.
All right.
There may be some warrants filed for saying his name, but no, like he's the one that was running PWX and brought you down.
Right.
Immediately, you know, said, I joked around and said, you're my new best friend, but I sincerely meant it. You were a good kid. You helped out. You're always willing to go on the road with us. And another vote I could get in the car when I was like, hey, what type of music we want to listen to? Country music. And then there's another vote right there, you know? So, but always willing to have you around, you know, took you up to Northeast Wrestling.
Yeah, plenty of times. And, you know, I was always ready to like, all right, get in the car, let me drive. You know, I'm like, okay, I need to be the one drive, whatever. You did it the whole way back.
that was a long time. That's when I did the whole way and back. Now I've a little bit mellowed. I've got a little bit of a rhythm now. I drive all the way up. I drive 2 hours to get us to 81 so nobody can mess it up.
Yeah.
Although Caleb, about a year ago, messed up the 77-81 switch. And like, it's like, how long have you been doing this? I've known you since 2007. We've been making this trip. And you blow past the 77 exit and you almost end up in Bristol. Like, what is wrong with you?
Same trip, same exit, same, like, you...
There's a huge green sign that says Charlotte.
And I'm directionally challenged, you know what I mean? But, like, I can do that, I think, you know what I mean?
I always felt comfortable with taking over and letting you drive. And then the one time we had Corey along that one time, I was like, okay, I got two guys that I know are going to be okay.
Right.
That's what I always appreciate. But, yeah, during the days that you're going up, I was a different person. I had a lot of anger I had to drive out of me. but no, like you're getting around, so you're getting all the exposure, you're getting on bigger shows and stuff like that. Like how are you taking all that stuff? Like how does that feel? Like, oh, the hard work's paying off, or what seeds planting in your mind?
You know, yeah, kind of like hard work's paying off, and just kind of like, but really not even that, and not really even that sense of like accomplishment or like, oh, I'm getting to that next level. It wasn't even that as much as like I was still just loving it. Like, oh, I got to be in a ladder match with Matt Hardy. That was just so freaking cool for me. You know, mm-hmm. like even then that wasn't like, you know, being worried about, you know, okay, like,
this
well,
is
maybe
another
next
position.
Time.
This is another, there's another chess
yeah,
move
it
to
still
get
didn't
me to here,
like
to get me to here, to get me to here.
Right.
So, but you had to have some long-term vision of things.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, cause you get to those points where you get on the, those bigger shows, and then it's the idea of like, how do I get to the Ring of Honors and the other things? You
right.
know what I'm saying? And, you know, what was your thought process on that? Like, what was it? What was your overall plan? Because for me, it was always get to the East Coast, and then I'm on the East Coast.
Right.
Let's get on the bigger shows. And then it's like, okay, now get on credible shows.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm still at right now. See, even after like 12 years, I'm still trying to figure that one out. Still trying to crack that nut.
Yeah.
But like, what was the thought processes and the chess moves for you?
I think, you know, like, and like wrestling has changed a lot in the past year or two. You know what I mean? Like my thought process 5 years ago it would totally be different than what it would be now.
Absolutely.
But then 5 years ago it was pretty much like, okay, I went to these Ring of Honor camps. They actually like me. They told me some things to improve upon, so I'll do them. I was doing like the like extra stuff for WWE, thinking that like, okay, either these dark matches with Ring of Honor are going to get me signed there. I'll be good there, and then WWE will sign me. Mm-hmm. Or I'll do these extra things. Someone will like me there. They'll sign me. Like thinking that was, you know, that was just going to happen, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And thinking it was going to happen fast, too. Mm-hmm. I kind of got, maybe at that point when I started doing those Ring of Honor matches and doing, like, WWE extra stuff, too, then I started to get a little antsy and then start to think, you know, okay, I want to do this for a living. I need to be doing it right now. I think I'm good enough. Wasn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think I'm good enough. And that was when I think it started to, you know, I started to think of things in terms of, like, moves and positions and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
So it was that point in things. And the thing is, too, is, like, you're able to benefit from something that's going on in wrestling right now that I think is fantastic, because when I was around, and I feel like 2009 was a good year for me and kind of a peak position for me, like as far as like in-ring work, my ability, my focus and everything like that. Like that was probably the year for me,
right?
Was 2009. Not a lot of things were happening though, because the same hot indie guys in 2009 were the same hot indie guys in 2003.
Right.
There was no forward progression.
No.
There was no movement. Things were stagnant. When you did do extra talent stuff, you were looked up, like it was the situation like, oh, I don't think we're allowed to eat catering today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Randy Orton might shit in our bag. they keep us in a separate locker room. Oh, it's not even a physical room. It's a pup tent.
And they
And they tell us that we have to put it up. So we're like basically in a tent, you know
right.
what I'm saying? With no windows, so we're just getting changed out in the open.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I have a roof over my head.
Right.
Thank you for that in case it rains inside of this building here in Roanoke. But everybody can see clearly through this tent right,
right
now because there's no zip-up thing.
Right.
So I appreciate that, I guess. But yeah, and then like nobody did anything by you. And if you didn't shake everybody's hands or you were in the right place at the right time or you know, like I remember clearly walking down the hallway because that's all you do is just walk, drink coffee,
oh, yeah,
walk,
just drink. Because
you have to be present.
12 hours.
Yeah, you have to be present. And I remember there's a situation. It was a narrow hallway. I had a situation where like Bob Holly wasn't really paying attention to who was walking. And then I had Stephanie McMahon and her nanny who was carrying, you know, her baby. There's a situation where it's like, I was going to bump into one of them and I have to make a decision real fast.
That's a tough one.
I picked hardcore Holly. I apologized immediately. I figured that was the safest decision as opposed to bumping in the nanny and dropping.
Oh, right. A baby. Yeah.
The baby.
The baby.
Vince McMahon's grandbaby. I feel like I made the decision. The
probably
best
decision. Was, yeah.
But it's just like that's the environment that guys like us were under.
Yeah.
And it seems like things have now opened up.
I think so too. Like, I think I felt the same way you did when I was there too.
Yeah. Cause I think you caught just a little tail end
yeah.
of it. Like the Bravado brothers definitely caught the tail end of
yeah.
it and they started to see the turn.
Yeah.
So
I think, and a lot of it might've been kind of self-imposed too, just as so much as being like, oh my God, I better not do this and that
yeah.
without anybody saying that, you know, just me thinking like, that's the way you're supposed to be. I better have my shoes shined. I better, whatever, you know what I mean?
All wearing button-up blue shirts with black slacks.
Oh, my God, yeah, exactly. Exactly what I wore.
It was an extra talent uniform.
That was it.
But, yeah, it was just that sense of nervousness. If we just kind of relaxed, you know, and
yeah.
you know, and also, too, like, it's almost like now I hear stuff like, oh, guys are welcoming. And I've even heard they've, like, flown in extras from, like, North Carolina to go to Minneapolis. And
what?
Then they've gone on the road.
Oh.
I've heard this. This is like
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's insane. And then they're giving him full-on tryouts and letting him do stuff in the ring and like
now when I was there, I will say this, like it was always the same routine. It was like Regal was in charge of stuff, so like it was Monday you would sit in the stands with Regal and he would give you a talk or whatever. It'd be about an hour or so talking about psychology and this and that and what he wanted to see of you in promos and matches and all this kind of stuff, and pretty much telling you, like, you know, some people have a quality like The Rock. None of you have it, so show me something else. Which was a good talk, but, you know, it was always the same Monday, and then Tuesday were, like, the trial matches. And so, like, I did get to do those pretty much every time I was there, I think, you know, before six of us or whatever, and they'd just pair us up, and we'd have matches at, you know, 2-3 o'clock on Tuesday, whatever. And then promos, too.
Yeah. Well, that's insane, because it was very structured that way, where yeah. I missed that by, like, 6 months. Ugh. 6 months. I was 6 months away from that. I'll never forget, like, it was just very, like, weird, and... The one time that I did get, like, a dark match, it's one of those things where, like, they're like, aren't you going to get in the ring, you know? And, like, I'm like, okay. And you get in the ring. Right. And then I'll never forget, it was me and Drew McIntyre. And I don't know why he did this. I don't know if he was working on stuff because he just debuted on SmackDown.
Right.
We were wrestling for a while. Like, because normally, like, people just stand in there and then just kind of all tag in.
Oh, yeah.
And that never happened. Like, everybody jumped down and kind of went off. And then we were just wrestling in the ring and we kept going back and forth. And it was, like, I felt like 20 minutes. Like, we had a 20-minute match where he put heat on me. I had comebacks and calling it all. Like, he was fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, he led me through, but I was there to handle everything. I did everything correctly. And just so happened, like, I'd been wrestling Richie Steamboat on, like, some of these shows.
Yeah.
And Ricky was walking down to the ring with Johnny Ace. So Johnny Ace goes, who is that other guy in the ring?
Right.
Like, almost like get him out. But then Ricky's like, oh, this guy, he trains with Ricky. And then that's how I got my dark match.
Ah, good.
It was because it's just weird timing like that.
Yeah.
And that's... best case scenario at that moment in time.
Right.
You weren't getting a promo. You weren't getting structured anything.
Right.
Like, that was like the best case scenario.
Yeah. It was just like all like shooting for luck. You know what I mean? Like, in the right place at the right time.
That's all that was. And that's what was so impossible about that era of wrestling. You know what I'm saying? Like, and now you look at it, you have NXT and have all these guys.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
That, you know, now you're investing in guys that have, like, love the sport and dedicated their lives to it.
Right.
You're not trying to train football players. You're not trying to take stuntmen and make them do this. You're not trying to get amateur wrestlers. You're getting guys that have already toured the world, guys that, you know, have been doing it and just live for it and will die for it. You know, and also too, you can manipulate them pretty easily too.
Yeah.
Because, like, hey,
because they just want it.
Yeah, they just want it. You know what I'm saying? So that's good too. But at the same time too, don't you want people that want it?
Right.
You know, and I think that's really had changed everything. So just William Regal stepping up and doing that.
Yeah.
And then when Finley was out and just looking at guys, that was a big thing too. And yeah. I think that's really changed the whole temperature of the sport right now. And I really feel like that's why it's so successful right now, is that there's forward progression.
Yeah, for sure. Like, for a long time, you know what I mean? It felt like it was just so stale, just like no progression whatsoever. And now, I mean, so it's everything's so hot.
Yeah. It's like, okay, your main event on this New Jersey Jersey All Pro Show is Low-Key versus Chris Hero in 2010.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I get it. Both those guys are fantastic. The match will be great, but, like, that was a big match in 2003. Like, when do we get to see who else? You know what I'm saying? And there weren't a lot of big indie stars that popped up. I think Davey Richards might have been the only person for, like, a really long time.
Yeah.
And he even, like, internet, like, crucified him, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, like, he went through his. But, like, that forward progression, I think, benefited you. You were kind of already in the mix in these dark matches of Ring of Honor. Guys start moving up. Now you start moving up.
Right. Yeah, it was one of those things where, like, I thought, you know, it was something that was going to happen for a while, and then it kind of didn't for a while. So I started to think, well, maybe not. Maybe I just need to cool down and, you know, whatever. And then that's when it happens, right when you think it's not going to happen. I think it was a match with Silas Young for TV, and that was, like, the day that I signed, too. And they told us pretty much, like, all right, we're not going to give you entrances. We're just going to come back from break. You're both in the ring, whatever. You're going to look like two jobbers. But then for 6 minutes, just go absolutely nuts. So that by the end of those 6 minutes, it looks, you know, there's an element of surprise because you don't expect anything at all. And then mm-hmm. if you get something even decent, you know what I mean? It's surprising. So that worked. And that was the day I was signed too. Obviously, they made that decision before then. You know, I knew of it before then. But that was
they've got the piece of paper there. They just want to see. Okay, is he just gonna do what he needs to do? So you just need to hit a base hit.
Yeah,
that's all you need to do right now. Just get a base hit, and then we're gonna put this.
Yeah, that was it.
Well, how'd that feel?
It felt really good. Like, at that time, because I think in Ring of Honor, anything that had aired. Like on TV or whatever, we're just kind of like squash match type of stuff. So actually to get out there and do something and actually have the spotlight a little bit was really good. And especially like I really like the way they introduced us too, with, you know, just coming back from break, you're just two guys in the ring, whatever.
That's a great good way to do it. That yeah, was very
that's,
smart.
That's how it should be done. Yeah, you know what I mean?
For sure. Totally agree.
Yeah, when you set the bar so low, I mean, you could only succeed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that makes any bit of success look so much better.
Yeah, and both you guys, and Silas has wrestled for quite some time, and, right, and he would know what to do in that situation.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
You know, like, he's fantastic, he's great, and you were itching to go, so, like, telling two guys like that, go crazy for 6 minutes.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
No problem.
Yeah, just been dying to.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's the thing, too, is, like, forward progression started happening. Well, like, when I was doing there, it was, like, there were so many guys, and there were a lot of guys when you got in, like,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, it almost, like, it was almost, and I remember it kind of taking a little bit for them to start getting you into the mix a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then, of course, you got in there with Decade and Jimmy Jacobs and BJ Whitmer, which I was so happy when you got in,
man,
with
too,
those guys. You yeah know what I'm saying? Because Jimmy is so intelligent,
God,
so
I love
bright.
Jimmy.
Yeah, well, tell me about what he did for you.
So, you know, I had maybe been there 6 months or something like that, and, you know, I was just doing Country Boy Adam Page.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know
but
what I mean?
You've been for a while.
And, then, you know, I was okay. I was serviceable, but, like, I was not lighting the world on fire.
Serviceable. That's a good
you
word.
You know what I mean? Like, I was a good hand, but I wasn't lighting
should,
the world
that
on fire.
That should have been the name of my sixth disc set.
Serviceable. But, you know, it was going okay, and it was one of those things where it's like, all right, you know, cool, he's doing good, but you need to be better than good. Yeah. And Jimmy, Roddy, and BJ had just started the Decade thing. And I was in the bathroom in Chicago, I think it was. And Jimmy was down there, a couple urinals down. He's like, hey, man, like, we got this idea. I pitched it to Hunter. I think we're going to do it. You're going to be the Decade's young boy. You know what I mean? You're going to carry around our water. You're going to do like a towel and all that kind of stuff. And then he was like, yeah, I think we're going to do it. And then he just walked off. And at that moment, and probably for the next couple months after I started doing it, I was actually kind of miserable with it because I enjoyed working with them. You know yeah what I mean? But at that time, I kind of felt like, you know, okay, you know, I'm good. Why are you putting me in this position? Why are you making me look like an
so
absolute
you,
no one?
You couldn't see what they were setting you up
I,
for?
I didn't see
I could,
it.
I could see it right away. I was like, you don't even, like, I was like, this is the perfect setup.
I didn't see it probably for a month or two. And, like, I was coming out and I was just wearing the jeans and cowboy boots I came to the show with, mm-hmm, thinking, like, oh, I'm still the country boy. Like, I need to be wearing this and just a Decade t-shirt or whatever and half-assed being a young boy. And then probably after a month or two doing it, somebody had a match with Chris Hero that, like, we came out and jumped him afterwards. He pulled me aside after that and he was like, hey, man, like, if you're going to be a young boy, like, be a young boy. Come with, like, the track pants. Come with, you know, carry around their water. Like, just absolutely do it, because if you don't, you're just going to look an idiot. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I think that's when it started clicking for me. Like, okay, yeah, if I'm going to do this, I just need to be the absolute biggest young boy, fanboy-looking guy I can. So that's when I went and got, like, the little shorts and would start, like, doing Hindu squats with BJ before the match. Like, all that kind of
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly.
And, like, got into it. And that's when I think, like, Jimmy kind of, I don't think really Jimmy liked me. Not that he didn't like me, but I don't think he really saw that I got it until that point, too. And I think once he saw that, like, I got it.
So he was just looking for a warm body at the time.
Maybe, you know, and maybe he saw something else. You know, I don't know. But I think it wasn't until I really started to get into being a young boy that he started to realize, okay, cool, we can do stuff with this. Mm-hmm. And then I would start to throw out ideas while everybody else was and felt like, you know, a part of the group in terms of creativity. You know, like, okay, well, what if I did this? I'm the young boy, like, you're kind of brainwashing me. What if this is what happened? Oh yeah, it's good. That kind of thing.
Yeah, because it's very interesting too. Because it's like that. You know, you get a guy that trains you, and you kind of follow him around. And but like you're just doing it to the umpteenth degree, and very much like, you know, Japanese, where you always see that because
oh, yeah,
that's what Misawa and Kawada, they did that and stuff right like that. And it brings that all back around. So that way, when you came around and you're like, you finally paid your dues and you're part of the group. And you were just this dick of like, oh, you know, you got to pay your dues now.
Yeah.
I love that so much because that happens so many times in wrestling.
Right.
You know, a guy, you know, he first starts off, he gets really humble. And then they start doing a little stuff with him. Then all of a sudden he starts like being the assistant trainer. And then all of a sudden, like the new guys come in and like, let's do chop training.
Right.
And like, dude, you are 2 years removed from being that guy. Why are you going to be a dick?
Right.
Like, and that has never been portrayed before in pro wrestling. And that's what I loved about that character is that they're like, oh, now I paid all my dues. I don't have to pay him again. Screw you. I'm going to kill you.
Now. Right. Yeah. And I think the original idea was kind of like the obvious. And I think a lot of people telegraphed it too, was that like, I would be the young boy and like, I would consistently get better as being a young boy, and then finally I'd stand up for myself. I'm good, you know, that kind of thing. Don't bully me anymore.
And that goes either way. That could either be you're the baby face or I'm part of the group.
And I think it was largely telegraphed as like, I'm the baby face. Oh, don't bully me anymore. I'm not going to stand up for this.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And it started to be, okay, well, once Roddy finishes this thing with Cedric, it's going to be you in a program with Roddy and you're going to finally stand up to him, which like to me at the time didn't feel right. Because, you know, everything you do in wrestling, you try to base it off of how you actually feel. And that's when you're most successful. And at that time, I was just enjoying being a young boy. I didn't feel like that about BJ, about Jimmy, and certainly not Roddy. Because Roddy, I think, of the whole group, was the one who was the furthest removed from doing anything with the young boys. You know what I mean? So
he's
like,
get out of my way, bro.
Yeah, just get out of the way. Like, didn't use us in the matches and stuff. And that's okay. That's just was his thing. But, like, at that time, I was having way more fun being the young boy than I actually wanted to get out of it. And it just didn't feel right. I kept sticking up for like, hey, look, this just isn't the way to go. You know what I mean? If this is the way to go, it's not now. But I don't think it's the way to go at all. I think it's the other way. I think it's that I'm enjoying this so much and I get more evil and nasty with BJ kind of as the mentor, which he kind of was in that respect, that it's the opposite flip. I flip to the heel, you know what I mean, and kick Roddy out. And that's what we ended up doing, and I think that worked way better.
Oh, I totally agree. And it's different.
Yeah, yeah,
like you said, and that's what you need. Something that Les Thatcher said is, and it always rings true in everything I try to do, is that the only thing we have left, now that everybody knows the cat's out of the bag and what we do, and everybody can figure it out, is the only thing we have left is the element of surprise.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We're magicians in that sense. And now that I do comedy, it's understand that your punchline has to be a magic trick. And like, how did you get there? How did your mind get there?
Right.
And the same thing with an angle like that, same thing with what we do in wrestling, it all has to be a magic trick. So if we go in an opposite direction where everybody thinks you're going to go, that's what people react to.
Yeah, yeah. And I felt like the whole deal with me standing up to Roddy and being the big baby face was just so,
they've
just
seen
so
that.
Generic. Yeah, they've seen that 1,000 times, and they wouldn't get behind me because why would they? You know, they enjoyed seeing me get bullied and stuff like that, so why would they get behind me? It felt just like we'd do that little thing and be right back where I started.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Which just did not feel right. So I would fight and fight and fight to not have that be the thing to happen. And I think once we kind of like had a good idea for a different way it could go, then we all realized collectively, like, that's way better. That's way better.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I loved it. And then you got your young boys in and stuff like that. And it was great. You know, and I think like it fit in well with what Cedric was doing at the time. And I think ACH was it TARDIS or was it ACH at the time?
ACH.
ACH, yeah. And I just felt like how it all fit into what those guys were doing, what you guys were doing. I felt like all three of you came up at the same time.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? And as guys moved on and did other things, you guys were being now elevated and stuff like that.
Right.
Up the card.
And I feel like, too, like, you know, me and Cedric and ACH and stuff were kind of at the same place on the card.
Yeah.
But, like, the fans really wanted to get behind ACH and wanted to get behind Cedric, but they didn't have as much of that feeling towards me. So like I couldn't go the same path as them. It just wouldn't work.
No.
You know what I mean? I mean, I could have, but I would have never been what they were in that role. You know what I mean? So I knew I had to be the opposite, their mirror. You know,
and
what I mean?
You want to be the heel that works with them.
Yes. And work with them. Yeah.
So, and that works out better because you know, it's going to be a good
that
way.
Yeah.
You know, other than Cedric's going to break your nose.
Oh, yeah.
How many times did he break your nose?
Just one broken nose.
Just one broken
nose. But, like, you know, like,
people. Which I love him. I love him to death.
Now, people give, I think, Cedric a hard time about hurting people. But I will say this, these are my experiences with Cedric. Most of the time I've gotten hurt, it's been with Cedric. One of them was when he went to give me a hip toss. I was supposed to land on my feet. And somehow when I flipped, I hit his head with my head. It's not his
fault.
Yeah. Right? Happens. Mm-hmm. Another one was when he came charging in with a drop kick and he just came faster than I expected and I didn't get my hands up in time. Whose fault is that?
He's a very, very aggressive.
And
I love him for it. And that's why I think he's as good as he is.
Right.
But here's the thing you got to understand with him. He is a unique blend of athlete that's very interesting. It'll be very interesting to see how the rest of his career plays out, especially this is a very big point in his life and his career right now, how that's going to play out because he was very big for a considerable amount of time, but he had a considerable amount of speed and agility.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, people talk about, like, you know, yeah, Moose is a big guy, and he can kind of do what smaller guys do.
Yeah.
But Cedric is right in that sweet spot of being, especially at that moment in time, he's leaned down a little bit now, but he was in that sweet spot of being kind of big and coming with such a force.
Oh, yeah. It always surprised me.
People... You know, like, he was a very special athlete,
yeah,
you know, that way. And I don't think people really had seen anything like mm-hmm. that. I mean, we're talking about somebody like a Too Cold Scorpio or Rob Van Dam,
right?
You're like a very rare athlete, like yeah. that's Cedric Alexander,
yeah.
And it was very evident very early. And it, yeah, he's very aggressive. And that's the thing, is that if you're not careful, accidents like that happen,
right?
Just because you're not going to see anybody move that fast.
No.
That's that big.
You're not used to that. Like, another one was when I was on the apron, and he was trying to pull me in the ring. So I thought he was trying to do, like, the Randy Orton DDT. So I just hugged him for that, and he was like, all right, cool. But then, like, Cedric, just being who he is, just snaps back so hard with the DDT, I didn't have time to, like, pull my hand out from under him. So that's when I broke my thumb.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that Cedric is just so athletic and so fast and so snappy, like, that you don't expect that. So, like, you don't react in time enough to protect yourself.
You're used
to
wrestling everybody else.
Yeah, you're used to everybody being a tick slower.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're just not prepared for that.
Yeah.
And when it happens, it's just, oh, crap, it just happened. And yeah, it's just too fast.
I think that's the big thing that comes with him on that.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've realized him with, too. Luckily, I was one of the guys that helped train him, so I'm aware of his timing.
Right.
So I think that's why I've avoided serious injury with him.
Right.
Although I'm wrestling him here in a few weeks. Ooh. So we'll find out.
Good luck. Good
luck. We'll find out. And in a main event as well. So we're really going to have to go. So I'm a little bit worried for myself. But but anyway, so you're doing that. And, like, I've always loved the idea of heel Adam Page.
Oh, me too.
I've always loved it. I don't know if I was the first to book it with Country Jack, but... Goddamn, that's one of my favorite things ever, when we put you and Corey together at PWX.
Oh, yeah.
And you turned heel, and it's like, just seeing you, you were always like, oh, I'm Adam Page on a card. But then see you just turn into, like, heel, like, in a second. Oh, it was so good.
Oh, man.
Like,
yeah.
You felt so at home at it.
It felt so good. And, like, I've been a babyface for so long, most of my career, probably just because I was young. And looked like I should be a babyface.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, sure. Yeah, he's the babyface. And, you know, I'd wanted to try being a heel. You know, I had ideas of what it would be like.
You started growing a beard. I'm like, okay, I can pull it off.
Right, right. And then, like, we did the thing with Corey, and that was probably the first time I'd ever really been a heel, aside for, like, one or two shows. And, like, the how natural I felt being with Corey and being Country Jack and being a heel within the first month or two just surpassed how comfortable I'd felt, or how not comfortable I'd felt being a babyface my entire career. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, within a month or two, I was like, wow, I'm doing way better at this. I'm enjoying this way more than I ever enjoyed anything. Mm-hmm. All the rest of it. You know what I mean? This mm-hmm. is so much more natural for me. And I think part of that is just because, like, at that time, that's when I'm starting to kind of, like, itch for, you know, okay, I think someone should sign me now. Something should start happening. So you start to get a little frustrated. And when you have that little bit of frustration that you can just, like, take out and
that
just
bravado,
live out.
You know,
oh, yeah.
So you gotta get that
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
It's gotta come out. Like,
yeah.
I remember being hot like that in 2009. You know, and, like, that's when, like, Ric Flair was around a lot. So
yeah.
I was like, oh, the only way to really be successful in wrestling is kind of be a dick a little bit. Like, yeah. And, like, it kind of boiled over to real life. And, like, yeah, like, you when you get that feeling, that's such a great feeling to have.
Right.
You know, and then when that gets validated, ooh, that feels good.
Yeah.
Oh, that feels good.
Yeah.
But you were getting that validation, Ring of Honor, and you're doing all kinds of stuff. Decade broke up, I think, and then you kind of were, like, out there for a bit.
Yeah, like, I did a feud with ACH, then I did a feud with Jay Briscoe, which was awesome. He's probably, like, one of my favorite people I've ever worked with.
Country boy, new
oh
best
yeah,
friend.
Yeah, yeah, he's a newer best friend.
New best friend.
He's awesome. You know what I mean? And we did that thing, and then it was like that was kind of the catalyst. Like, they were trying to build up to a Steve and BJ Whitmer match, right? And they were building up to that for, like, a long time.
Yes.
A couple years. And,
like,
and
it just happened, like,
yeah, it
a
just
month
happened.
Or two. Yeah.
And it's still kind of going.
Yeah.
But, like, the first thing was that BJ had to have knee surgery. Okay, so we had to put it off longer. Then Steve had to have neck surgery. Mm-hmm. Put it off longer. Or really, it was in question. Okay, I don't know if this is going to happen anymore. You know what I mean? Neck surgery. But I think Steve found out he had to have neck surgery, like, a week before I had that match with Jay Briscoe. So we started figuring out, like, how can we make this work longer, whatever. And then I was pretty much just telling Hunter, like, I'm the only person left to keep something going, you know, with this thing we've been doing. Like, I think this is the point where I finally kind of flip on BJ. And I don't think it really played out 100% the way I wanted to. But yeah, that kind of happened for a while. So it was a little bit of a babyface turn, but it was always, I was trying to keep the same demeanor because I, in my mind, I wanted to finish that feud with BJ. I wanted people to cheer me more than BJ, obviously. But then I wanted to be right back to who I was because I haven't changed as a person. Mm-hmm. I was just mad at him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that maybe almost hurt it a little bit. You know, I wasn't playing the babyface as much as some people would have in that role. I was just thinking, like, I'm still an asshole. You know what I mean? It's just, now it's against him.
You've got to protect yourself.
Like, right.
This is myself as a character, and I feel like this is the volume that I need to be at to be successful.
Yeah.
You know, you got to figure that out. Like right now, like, I'm supposed to have, like, serious matches, but I feel like there needs to be some humor to them. There's got to be some entertainment value because I feel like that's who I am. If you try and be too far away from what yourself, then people don't believe it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whether yourself is a little more goofy or whether you're a little more serious or you're a little bit more of a heel, you've got to stay true to what you feel like is the most successful brand of yourself.
Yeah.
But speaking of successful brands, you are now part of a very successful brand right now.
Oh, man.
The Bullet Club, I heard about this, and I was like, is this a typo, or is he just, like, affiliated with them? Like, I didn't know quite what that all, like, entailed and how that decision was made. Or were you just like, oh, yeah, you kind of are with us? Like, I didn't know. Tell me how that came about.
Man.
Who decided that? How did that? I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it was huge. Like, that was a hell of a phone call. I was sitting at home one night, just sitting at home alone, whatever. And Jeff Jones, who does, you know, a lot of stuff for Ring of Honor, called me. He was like, hey, man, what are you doing these days? And it was like a few days. I was like, you know, I don't know. Do we have a show or something? Are we doing something weird in my travel? He's like, well, we're going to have you join Bullet Club and you're going to work for New Japan. I was like, oh. Okay. What?
You could have just said one of those news, as I would have been happy.
Right. Yeah, it was both at the same time. Just shotgun. Boom. Your life's changing. Yeah, that was a thing. And, you know, I think it was that, you know, they're not trying to make two separate entities with, like, a Bullet Club Japan and Bullet Club USA, but they wanted to use Bullet Club as, like, a thing.
Because that worked out so well with WCW and NWO.
Like. Right. And I don't think, you know, that's the idea, but I think it's like we want a more of a representation here as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, they wanted Adam Cole to be kind of like a leader here, you know what I mean? And then the Young Bucks, obviously. But it couldn't just be a three-person group. They needed at least another person. And, you know, when you think about who those three guys are, you needed somebody who wasn't, you know, not saying like at their talent level, but just at their level in the card, whatever. You needed somebody a little, you know, just a step beneath whatever. And looking at the guys who they could have used, they were just like, Adam Page is the perfect one, really. And he can be the one who's not too sweet and everybody and laughing at everything. He can just be miserable Adam Page like he is now. Mm-hmm. Just let him be the bully, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And man, that just, and it, in my mind, is just perfect. Like, immediately it's like, yep, this is perfect, this is gonna work.
And now, was there like a super kick tryout? Like, we have to see if you could throw a super kick?
No, not really. You know, and probably
I would fail that. I my knees are so bad right now. I'm like, yeah, I can't throw a super kick. That's probably why I always say I'm always under all the time. I'm not over because I can't throw a super kick.
And I probably, the whole time I've been in Ring of Honor, until I joined Bullet Club, never thrown a super kick.
Yeah.
And I probably for the past 3 or 4 years had avoided throwing any at all, just because
that's their thing.
You know what I mean? So now it's just like, you know. Okay, I guess I'm throwing them now.
Okay, four of them at the same time.
Yeah, okay. Cool, yeah. I know the deal.
So, but, okay, now you're part of Bullet Club, New Japan. How was New Japan?
Oh, man, that was awesome. And, like, it wasn't what I expected to. I'm a really big homebody, you know what I mean? Like, I like traveling, I like wrestling, but I like to be at home, you know what I mean? And then when I got that call about going for almost 3 weeks to Japan, it's like, oh, God, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and I'm very happy about it, but at the same time, I'm homebody.
Well, so, have you ever, like, gone for an extensive, like,
no,
tour or anything? It's always been weekend. Like,
yeah,
weekend,
yeah, yeah.
Back,
weekends.
Weekend.
And, like, with Ring of Honor, maybe a week, you know what I mean, where we'd do something, like, when the New Japan shows, when they'd come over and we'd do, like, a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, mm-hmm. something like that. That's a week.
Yeah.
But this was 3 weeks in a different country. I was like, oh, man. You know, I was way more happy about it than I was, you know, not dreading it, but, mm-hmm. you know, just thinking in that way. But when I got over there, it was just like instantly, this feels way more like home than I thought it would. You know what I mean?
Like, what made it feel like home?
I don't know. Just you know, maybe I didn't think about, like, you know, what it's like to be around a group of, you know, wrestlers, whatever. I didn't think about that. I just thought about me being alone in my hotel room. What, like, that wasn't the case at all. You know, we all hung out and did stuff together. And then, like, the fans are so, so passionate and receptive over there. Like, the first night I got there, there were people waiting in the hotel room and, like, in the lobby. Like 20 or 30 people just to see people come in and want to buy stuff from you. I sold some gear and all that kind of stuff the first night, and then people paying to take you out to dinner and all that kind of stuff, like almost every night, and pay for food and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And man, it was just so much fun. And like the travel was another thing I was worried about, because I had never done like that many shows, you know, in a row like that. But even those were like, it was like one day on, one day off, one day on, one day off. But even those, like the hotel rooms were nice. The travel was like, I wasn't driving 12 hours somewhere like normal. I was just riding in a bus for 2 or 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And, yeah. You know, so it felt kind of easy. And even the matches were lower pressure because they were tag match. I think I had 2 tag matches and then 3 6-man tag matches. You know, so it's kind of lower pressure in that respect. So it just felt
just
so
gotta,
comfortable.
You just got to put your best spots in.
Yeah, pretty much.
In,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, gosh, that's got to be great. So, yeah, like, awesome. Everything you expected it to be?
Way more than I expected. You know, like, just way better than I expected. I go back next weekend, and I'm, like, I'm just, like, itching to go. I mean, it's weird. Like, I'm homebody, but I'm itching to leave. I'm itching to go.
Okay. So now with – are you still doing the school teacher job with all this now?
No. Well, you know, I knew – I was doing this first 3 weeks, and then, like, I asked Jeff, I was, like, you know, how often am I going to be going over? And he didn't really have an answer other than, like, pretty often. That was the only – the only answer I could ever get. Because
it does fluctuate a lot. Like, it's very hard, especially I know with booking WrestleCon, like, sometimes there's a situation, oh, we might have the Bucks. Oh, we won't. They're doing a tour. It's very fluctuating. Yeah. Sometimes you don't know.
You might be on this two-week thing. You might not work over there for 2 or 3 months. You know, like, you just don't know. But he was, like, pretty often. And I knew this first tour was, like, 3 weeks. And I just thought, like, and, you know, I knew, like, there was a considerable, you know, like, it was more pay and stuff, too. So it's like, you know, and my girlfriend who I was living with just got a job as an OT. So like she's making enough money for the both of us. You know what I mean? So like I could afford to take a chance. I was like, all right, well, I know I can't keep teaching because mm-hmm. I can't be sick for 2 or 3 weeks like I have been for a lot of Fridays. Mm-hmm. And I figured like it's probably best if as soon as school's out, I just tell them I'm not coming back next year so that, you know, I don't burn them by telling them right before classes start like the other guy.
Yeah.
So did that and just, you know, trying to make it work for a while.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're a better teacher now? Do you feel like you're not bullshitting your way through classes?
Oh, no. I was a good teacher the past couple of years. I think I was, like, really good, and I actually started to, like, really enjoy it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, at first, it was miserable because I didn't know what I was doing, but after the first couple of years, I got it. You know what I mean? It's fun. I like teaching by the end of it. Almost hated to leave, you know?
Yeah, that, you just didn't want to, like, that you had to.
Yeah, I kind of had to. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like I was dying to leave teaching. It was just kind of like, well, I kind of got to, and I'd much rather be doing this anyway. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
So it was a tough decision. It wasn't like, all right, cashing in my chips.
Right. No, you know, it was kind
of
like,
I'm going to sell a whole bunch of t-shirts now. Bye, guys.
Right. It wasn't like I was, you know, just itching to leave, like, you know, but I knew I had to, and I knew what I was going to do was even better. So
yeah.
It was a good decision, but it, you know, and it wasn't really a hard decision, but it was kind of like, oh man, all right, I'm going to miss that a little bit, but here we go. This is way better.
It's where life takes you.
Yeah.
You know, it's just sometimes it's a situation like that comes up, but you got to jump.
Yeah.
You know, that's the best time to jump is when you're the most scared.
Just waiting for it to drop me. You know,
so,
what I mean?
Exactly. All right. So you're on your way. You're doing the Bullet Club thing. You're out, you're busy. What the future hold? Like, what? Where are you feeling right now? What's life? I know you're getting ready to, like, aren't you getting, like,
getting married?
Getting married?
Yeah,
how's,
getting
how's
married
that?
Next month.
Oh,
like in,
Jesus.
Ooh, yeah, like that, 5 weeks maybe?
Oh.
Five, six weeks.
You feeling good about that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Really good about it. Just, like, nervous about getting everything done in time. You know what I mean? Like, the thought of actually, like, the marriage doesn't bother me at all. Like, we've been dating for almost 6 years or whatever, and it just, like, that's duh. You know what I mean? It feels like we're already married, whatever, but... just like getting the wedding stuff together is what's killing me now. Like, oh God, we got to get this. We got to tell so-and-so this, you know, that kind of thing.
Does it almost feel like you're doing it for everybody else?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. This wedding isn't for me.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
This is not for me at all.
Is it at least for her?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's for her.
It's okay.
For her, for
it's
sure.
It's at least for her. So.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like if that ever comes up with me and Josie, I don't think if we ever do anything, it won't be for either of us.
Right.
Like we plan a wrestling show together. We could do that, but like, it's just like, we'd rather not, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I have a feeling it's going to be like a 20-minute thing at the courthouse if it ever gets to that. Mostly because I want to get on her insurance.
same here. Yeah.
Well, you lost that good
teacher
insurance.
Oh, I lost
insurance.
That insurance. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Ooh.
And like before, we have to be married before I can get on that insurance. So there's these few months of like flux time where like, God, I better not get hurt. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'll be walking around with a broke leg for a few months.
Oh yeah, I've seen some of your Facebook posts about the way insurance shakes out, and I definitely feel you're paying on that.
Oh yeah,
I have no idea why I have to pay almost $250 a month for insurance as a healthy 34-year-old man.
Right,
that is insane.
Yeah.
Anyways, everything's good. You're about ready. You get married and stuff like that. I'm sure people will bug you about kids, but I won't bug you about that.
Oh, thank you. No kids.
No kids. I've already wrote as a stand-up. I'm trying to write like 7 minutes on why I don't have kids. It's real dark at times, but we're getting really close to the end. We need to probably wrap this up like right now. But I'm not going to let you off the hook, even though you're my friend. Basically, the whole reason I do this podcast is this moment right here.
Uh-oh.
This million-dollar question.
I'm not prepared.
That's the whole point.
Okay,
I've got you. I've got all you right. out of nowhere. But this is the whole thing. This all is right. the most serious
Let's
question. Yeah, you bet. Yeah, better. This is the final exam, Mr. Teacher.
Okay.
Basically, I talk to people from all varying degrees of success, and I want to know basically what success means to them. Is it an idea? Is it attached to a dollar amount? Is it obtainable? Do you think that you're there right now? Do you think you're on the path? Do you think you'll be happy when you get it? When I say the word success, what do you think of?
Man, that's a good question. I think I'm there. I feel successful because I know that I feel successful. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like if you have a passion and you feel like you're doing something about it, you're successful. I felt successful when I was 15 and got in a wrestling ring for the first time. And then, you know, I started having matches, and when they were good, I felt successful. I feel successful because I'm going to have a good marriage. You know what I mean? Like, I feel successful about that. I'm happy. I'm happy with my life. And that doesn't mean one thing or another. It doesn't, you know, if like I broke my neck and had to quit wrestling tomorrow, whatever. You know what I mean? I'm happy with life. I'm happy with the people in my life. And for me, that's success. If they wanted to stop paying me for wrestling and I wanted to keep doing it, I would still be successful in my mind.
Easy, you
know
might
mean?
Want to have me take that out.
Take that out. I didn't really mean that.
Don't make that a verbal contract.
Okay. Take that back.
But, so there is a dollar amount attached to it, okay?
Right, yeah. I mean, I have to eat, you know. But yeah, just...
That makes you happy, so therefore it all comes back around, you
right,
know?
Right, right. Just being happy with the way things are, for me, is success. And right now, I feel successful, you know what I mean? And I don't... And like a lot of people like, you know, oh, when are you going to WWE? Why don't you do this? Whatever in the moment is what I want to do, I'll do it. And if that makes me happy, cool. You know what I mean? And that for me is success. Like there's no dollar amount on that. There's no amount of like, oh, I got to this level in wrestling. My goal in wrestling when I was a kid was to get in a wrestling ring. I've done that now. You know what I mean? And I will always be happy with that. If I'd had one match and then never wrestled again, I would have been happy with that. I am where I am now. And if I never got any further, I'd be happy with that. If I got way further than I am now, I'd be happy with that too. You know what I mean? I just want to get in a wrestling ring, and I'm getting in one today, so I'm happy.
Right. So just live in the moment.
Just living it, yeah.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, Adam, you have a microphone in front of your hand, a live microphone. Let everybody know how they can get in touch with you, you know, buy merch, buy whatever, get in contact, tweet at you, tell you're awesome or tell you suck. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I get a lot of both.
Oh, yeah. Don't I know it. Or nothing at all. That's the scary part. Trust me, when you get nothing at all.
That's the scariest.
That's the scariest. Yeah. Trust me. Like, it's better to get the negative comments.
Aren't they talking about me? Yeah.
Because at least somebody's watching.
Right.
That's the hardening part. Please, plug all that stuff right now.
Yeah, I got a Twitter. It's at the Adam Page. Sorry, made that when I was like 17. I have a website. It's Adam Page Wrestling. I don't keep it updated very much, but you can buy my t-shirts and stuff there. So that's good for you to know. Pro Wrestling Tees /Adam Page. I have an Instagram. I just post weird pictures on it. I don't even say anything. So, you know, whatever you want to do with that.
All right. Well, Adam, thank you very much for taking time out of your day.
Thank you, new best friend. It's been a pleasure.
No problem, new best friend.
Thank you.
This has been a DSCT.TV production.